It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Stories is the medium of empathy, really. A book can maybe survive without it, but a book can't survive with it done poorly. We each see the Lord of the Rings movies versus the books. Mm-hmm. How I place the books significantly higher than the movies to me.
Can you not say significantly? Just say higher. Fine. The movies are significantly higher than the great books as well.
Da, 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 da.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Two to Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm the other host, Richard.
What do readers care the most about is the question we're asking. Everybody who's seen our reviews before or watches our stuff knows that we have six categories where we judge books based off of, just to kind of compartmentalize, talk specifically which part of a book so we can focus our reviews and then cover all the aspects of it, which are emotional impact, thought-provokingness, which is themes, characters, plot, world building, and prose. That's how we've broken down books in our discussions. And that, to us, covers everything that a book is going for. Some books aren't going for certain things, but we can discuss it, or we can just skip through and go, hey, the book's not touching on that, whatever.
Yep.
So, talking about that, and if you want to see how we rate that and use it, in the description below, we have our rating system of what do we mean by those categories. We'll talk about that as well as we discuss. But we're asking the question, and we asked our patrons on Discord as well, which, by the way, if you want to join our Patreon, check in the description below. This
we have a book club once a month.
Yes.
And it's a lot of fun. Go ahead, check down below. What this month is Guards.
Guards, yes.
Well, by the time this video is out, it is past. But if you're interested, if you join Patreon, you can actually watch the recording of our book clubs there as well.
Yes. And so I polled them of what was their favorite of the six. What aspect of a book do readers like the most? And Rich and I are going to go through and say which aspect is the most important for us that makes us really like a book, what we really look forward to, and what we want to see. And do you want to hear what the democracy said first, what the patrons answered?
Let's see what they got wrong.
Okay. The patrons answered with this. They said that the most important aspect of a book by far of those six categories is characters, by a long shot. The majority of people answered characters. We had basically 50%, 51% of people answered that. But it looks like even more. I can't do the math exactly in my head, but that many people said characters. And then, without looking at the screen, did you look at the screen yet?
I have not yet.
What do you think the next most important one was? What would you think readers find the most important?
It's like, it's on a big screen right here, so it's hard for me to like avoid looking at it.
Just close your eyes and go deep in thought.
Deep in thought.
Yeah.
If I were to read into the plebeians, you know, my guess would be plot is next.
Emotional impact's next. And then plot.
Ah.
And then they say thought-provokingness, the themes. Then they say world building, and then last is prose.
Okay.
That's what our patrons have said. So that's sample size of the patrons that we have there.
Mm-hmm.
So readers will vary. I think I will say this, Rich. The boring answer to this question is it depends on what the book's going for. What's the book trying for? Get rid of the, we know it depends. We're saying, what do we prefer? What gets us really going?
To me, it's what can make or break a book.
Exactly.
That ultimately.
Exactly that.
Could a book exist that with this alone and everything else not be there or not be good, and still can I enjoy the book? Or can everything be really good and this one thing is bad? Will it ruin the book? So that's kind of how I was ordering the importance of it. Of, is it the essential thing? Is it, can it make or break a novel? Or is it good in addition? Does the absence of it or ruin the novel? That's how I was
looking at it. I see what you mean, yeah. I was somewhat on the same page. I also gave a little bit more credit to the things that are, bless you. I also gave a tiny bit more credit to things that I've recently been really liking.
Okay.
So
cool.
We'll go in our order of how we usually go, starting with emotional impact of readers when they're looking at emotional impact. That was the second highest for the patrons that answered. Why do you think that's an important aspect of a book? Where does it rank for you?
I mean, of course, the emotional impact of a book is important because a lot of information can be told to you in many ways. The great thing about stories is putting you in the perspective of someone else's life and to be able to have empathy. Stories is the medium of empathy, really. And empathy requires emotion. Surprise, surprise. It's why it's important. It makes sense why people would say it's the second most important, because if you're reading for fun out there, it's because you want to connect with something. You want to feel something.
Entertainment.
Yeah. Especially if you're reading fiction novels. Generally, you want to be entertained or feel something at the end of it. Maybe you're not entertained. You want to feel sad. You want to feel joy. You want to feel something. It's, yeah. So, makes sense why people have it there. But where did you rank it in your level of importance?
I gave it number 3.
Okay.
What did you give it?
Number 5.
Oh, very. You are just dry. You are going, I don't care.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of just a real emotional book. However, I also like Neuromancer.
You didn't feel a thing.
I don't feel a thing in Neuromancer. To me, it won't break a novel for me. If I don't emotionally connect with the book, it's not going to break it for me. And I don't think it often will not make the book for me either. If it is a very emotional book, but everything else kind of sucks, mm-hmm. One, it's hard for me to assume that I will be emotionally connected with it if everything else is faulty. So I think it's dependent on a lot of other aspects. So that's why I put it pretty low.
Yeah, I'll give some responses from the patrons of the ones who said that emotional impact was very important. So Mitch said, emotional impact is the most important because it's the metric you use for whether or not you continue reading. If you're not emotionally invested in a book, why are you reading it? Even if you finish it, why would you continue the series? And Fry then says, I read books for the emotions they evoke in me. I generally treat reading as a form of entertainment, so naturally the emotional impact of a book is of utmost importance to me. And then Floydian says, for me, I don't really consider emotional impact as a separate category, but rather one determined by the others. If the character work is bad or the plot is boring, the world is off, then I don't get invested in the book to have an emotion other than bored. If the other aspects of a book are lacking, then the emotional impact score will tank. That being said, I find, then it goes on to explain characters. But so what do you think about their responses there of the ones that do like emotional impact and them saying that it's kind of just an aggregate of you mostly feel good if you like the characters, if you like the world. Aren't you just going, hey, I'm still reading Neuromancer because, ooh, I like the vibes.
That's the thing. Again, the boring answer depends on the person and what you're interested in reading and what interests you. For me, Neuromancer was thematically intriguing and the world was interesting for me that I wanted to explore more. Maybe I wasn't emotionally connected with the characters. I wasn't emotionally invested in some aspect of the world in this grand story, but I was intrigued and that was enough for me. And in many cases is more than enough. So it really does depend, but all of their points is completely valid. Fry saying that, it's a form, reading is generally a form of entertainment form. And so that's what he's looking for. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Like, yeah, if I'm reading to be entertained and I'm not entertained, well, guess what? I'm not going to continue on. That's fair.
What would you say are some examples of emotional impact books that you go, okay, I love it because I'm just emotionally obsessed?
Yeah, Floydian is kind of right in this aspect of emotional impact it's hard for me to think of something where
separate
it's
it, right?
Completely separate from everything else. Normally, you have an emotional scene or an emotional moment with a character. So maybe the plot is exciting and you are thrilled by the plot. Well, that's the emotion it's bringing out of you. Or a character's death is moving to you, or when the character's happy, you're happy. There's some degree of play with that. So I understand how it's more connected. It's hard for me to think of a story that's everything else is bad, but the emotional impact is strong. Can you think of anything?
I know the reverse a lot, where a lot of the categories can be higher, mm-hmm. but my emotional, the impact and the emotional beats aren't. Because when we're giving five stars, it's like out of body. Like I cheered, I laughed, I cried, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
A couple examples of that for me, Emperor's Soul is an example of a book that emotionally I was just, it's not that the characters or plot was invigorating and me going, oh my God, edge of my seat. It was intensely thought-provoking. I think about the book and I was intrigued. Like, all those kind of things where that stuff is super high and emotionally I'm just going like, okay, it's good. Like, if I'm just, I'm not going to say, here, read this book because it's going to make you cry. Maybe it'll make some people, but for me, it did not. But I love the book. Same thing with American Gods is a book that, for me, thought-provoking is super high. Plot, very high. Prose, very high. World, all these things are high. Emotionally, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a good story. I was emotionally compelled. I was compelled enough, but that wasn't the thing. I wasn't reading the story like I would explain it as Red Rising, as a story that I'm just in constantly. I am out of body. I'm emoting. I'm everything that this book is.
Mm-hmm.
So that from it's those kind of books where it, again, maybe leans into the more entertainment or leans into the more emotional, whatever that it doesn't. We're not saying entertainment in the that's lesser form, but more so is this something that because entertainment could literally be the opposite of do you cry during it like that? Basically an escape. Escape is maybe the right answer. Do you escape and feel the emotions this book's going for? But to your question there of is the opposite true where everything else is low? So you feel all these certain things about, you know, low characters, low plot, low everything, but the emotions are super high. That's rare. I can't think of good examples for that.
Yeah, I don't know how that's completely divorced versus mm-hmm. some of the other things. I can actually give good examples of a book that has almost nothing, but the characters are really good. But the plot, the emotional impact, the themes, everything else is nearly zero, but not characters.
I can think of some movies like that because some comedies or some cheaply made films are just like lousy made lousily made on the character or plot front, but then mostly like laughing a lot. And so you're going, okay, this movie's hilarious, but the plot is like, it doesn't even plot. There's not even a plot.
Yeah.
The characters are nothing.
Then that would mostly be prose and writing. Like, oh, that was witty or that was really creative and funny.
But you could give a score that's maybe 4 or 5 stars emotionally, but then the characters are like, two, three, I guess, because they were there, they existed. So mm-hmm. something like that. Or if you're reading a book that's more akin to those kind of things, that's where it'd be the case. But yeah, for emotional impact, this is what it can be true that this can be the result of what the other categories do. So do you want to move on to category two, which is thought-provokingness?
All righty. What'd you give this one?
That was your cue to say just before we do category two.
Oh, just before we
do the second thing.
Just before we do the thing. Sponsor from World Anvil. Thank you. Thank you so much for our sponsor, World Anvil. We're sponsored by a lovely company that actually helps you write your stories better and actually gets you to organize your thoughts, draw awesome maps. If you're into D&D, you can draw out maps, plan out your character trees, family lineages, all that stuff, and you can do it for free. If you want to use all the extra fun tools that you can pay money for,
use our code RAMBLE at checkout for 51% discount on a yearly subscription. They have a bunch of stuff. Go check them out. worldanvil.com/tutorramble. It'll be in the description below. And you could use them for all the tools that Rich mentioned. One of my favorites is their map making tool, like he said, but also your family lineages, whole bunch of stuff. Go check them out, even just for free, to give it a shot. And then if you like what you see, use code RAMBLE. Thanks a bunch to World Anvil for sponsoring this episode. And we'll get back into our categories.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, World Anvil, for sponsoring this episode. Now we have thought-provokingness. Okay.
Yes.
For you, where did you give that out of your ranking of the 1 through 6?
Number one.
Yep.
This is the thing that will either make or break. It's something where if everything is really well done, but the themes really don't land or tanked, it can ruin a novel for me. And the opposite is true. I can have a book that does almost, like, I'm not connected with the characters. I'm not emotionally invested. The world is fine. It just everything else misses. But somehow the themes come through. Maybe I'm not going to love the book, but I'm probably going to still like it and want to continue on and read. I'm intrigued by it. So that's why I think it has to be one for me. It's the make or break.
Yeah.
What about you?
It's number two for me.
Okay.
Now, number two, where it is one of those things that can elevate a novel that would otherwise... the thought-provokingness, when we're thinking about this, it's a book you reflect on, use an example, and it constantly is a part of your life afterwards.
Yeah.
So for me, when I think emotional impact, of, I can still think back to a time I cried, and man, what a scene, but things that stick with me very, very long are also, what is it saying? How does the story say it as well? Which we'll get into later, but the message of a story, that's the thing that when I read a book, it feels so much more fulfilling. If I was both entertained, awesome, great, but entertained and also I'm wowed and going, wait, that in the best form changed my life. When you say a book changed my life, what people mean by that usually is, well, it had something to say that impacted you so deeply that yeah. imparted some message. Now, that could be in other regards too, like it changed your life because it, well, even that when you emotionally cry over something, it's because something about that theme of whether it's separation or a mother's love or all of yeah. these things, what makes me also feel in the end comes from these themes often.
Yeah, no, it's the central tenet that a book can maybe survive without it, but a book can't survive with it done poorly, to me. That's at least how I'm feeling about it. What did the people have to say about it? What did the plebeians have to say?
This one wasn't rated very – wasn't up there on, so they didn't talk about it very much. They didn't talk about themes from what I saw.
We got just a bunch of dum-dums in the Patreon, apparently. Yeah, I'm calling you out. I know you guys sometimes watch these videos. No, it's understandable. It's maybe it's a flaw. Maybe it's just a personal preference, but it's at least how I see it.
I think it leans toward this, too, of maybe earlier on in my reading journey, or there are times where I would say, I should clarify this, too. These are my rankings right now.
Sure.
Mine has changed in the past. I used to be more of a character person, which that'll be the next one we talk about. But thought-provoking themes is something that recently, from us doing long pod episodes and wanting to talk about a book, it's so much more fun to talk about a book when there's substance
mm-hmm.
of, hey, there's clearly something it's saying or doing that makes us...
It's the thing that gets you to remember the book years later.
Yes.
A reason why I will always remember almost every detail of Lonesome Dove is... everything it had to say and how every scene, every moment, every character was deeply tied to its themes mm-hmm. and its message that will stick with me the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That is the core reason why it's arguably my favorite book ever.
What would you say to books where you can certainly enjoy them, but the themes are kind of, it's not going for anything deep. It's not going for anything. It's, hey, a friendship
yeah,
or simple things, but they're still awesome books yeah. and stuff you can read that isn't thematically heavy.
Well, that's why we have, like, our scale is neutral, is basically, the themes are just not really there. It's not going for something and failing. It's just not attempting it, not attempting any type of deep substance in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it's, you could still have a good book that way. It's still an enjoyable time. But will that be one of my favorite books ever? Will it elevate it to, you know, a legendary status in my mind? No. It's one of those essential things. It won't break a book if you don't have it, but it certainly does make it. And if you try to do something and fail, then I hate it. So, yeah, it's the thing I care most about in a book.
Can you have – what's the lowest your theme score can go with the book still getting a 5 overall?
Ooh, the book getting a 5 overall.
But what's the lowest your theme could possibly be for you to still go, this book floored me?
Interesting. I'm somewhere between probably a 4.
Probably a 4?
I think so. For a book to floor me, maybe I could give a 3.5. themes of like it's good, but then just everything else about it emotionally connected with me somehow in a different way that's not really saying anything about themes. I can see that happening, but for the most part, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine. It's hard for me to imagine a book giving it a 3 or a 2 and still giving the book 5 stars.
Interesting. Yeah. So giving it a if you're neutral on the themes, can I give a counterexample?
Go ahead.
But this would be a movie.
Oh, okay.
Because it's hard. So like The Raid.
Sure.
The Raid is a movie that is just action from start to finish, but it's some of the best action ever.
That's a fair point.
But so you'd go like probably 5 emotional impact through the roof. Themes like non-existent. There's a theme, but yeah. You wouldn't say it's bad. You just go, it's not going for the theme.
Interesting. Yeah. No, that something is like that is something to be said. That does make me think a little bit about it. That because I would give The Raid a 5.
Piece of like. But it did the things it's going for so well. Yeah.
Exactly. Versus, does a book need it? Can a book just be pure entertainment, no themes, no substance to speak of, and do everything else so masterfully that it still is a 5? I'm not sure if I've necessarily read that. At least I don't remember. Let me know down below if someone else remembers.
Something for me, so the books that would be closer to that, obviously, with a book, it's harder if the longer a book is and the more pages there are. Sometimes it's harder to not have something to say. So I'll use the example again just because it's to mind, but Golden Sun, like book 2 of Red Rising or something like that, where there's clearly themes and it's going for something. Is it my favorite thing of it, of Red Rising? It's not my I like the themes. I think they're either good or great, but depending on the book.
It is definitely not the focus.
Yeah, there's still really good themes in Red Rising. It's just I'm going that, and like it gets all the praise from me because I'm not going just the themes
of Red
Rising.
Emotions and plot.
Although I will say, depending on the book, Red Rising does have a really great theme. It just depends. It depends. But there's that, for example. There's an example for you. No, because you thought differently than me, but I also did love the themes. But more of your comedy books. Discworld often has a lot to say, but maybe Hitchhikers, something like that. But
sure, I guess so. But
comedy,
like,
action, yeah.
I like Discworld because it has something to say and it's funny.
Yeah, it does both.
It's maybe a reason. I don't know. Maybe I think it's harder to do in literature than it is in film.
Because I can think of plenty of films like Mad Max Fury Road. I don't care about the themes, okay? But it's the coolest movie ever. It's just, it's top tier, right?
Yeah.
But then, with books, often
are we just
when you're
snobs? Is that really what it is? That's the actual answer?
Well, maybe the thing is,
we're book snobs, not movie snobs.
Well, if you want to be more entertained, maybe entertainment is good and fun, but it's, again, if you're reading a book that has this long narrative, especially the longer a book is, you're going for, I kind of want all of it. Give me entertainment. Maybe I'm stretching, but what do you think about that? Is it when you were saying that to give a book overall a high score, would you acknowledge that? Could a theme ever be below neutral? Could a theme ever be like not good, but you love the book? Maybe that's inaccurate. That can't happen for you of how you view a book?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that would be my line and why it's a make or break. If it does it poorly, I'm going to think pretty negatively of the book.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And for me, thought-provokingness, we've been doing a lot more recently, too. I've just enjoyed being able to finish a book. And the whole podcast discussion we have, how often do we just have our section there be the longest section when we talk about it? So, yeah, number 2 for me. But do you want to go on to characters or anything else on themes?
No, let's move on.
Characters, where did you rank that of your 6?
To me, I gave it number 3.
Number 3?
Yeah. It's up there. Where'd you give it?
Number 4.
Number 4.
Number 4.
You have changed, man. You've changed since the beginning of this podcast.
I used to think I was a character reader. Well, I used to be a character reader. Yeah. I think.
Honestly, I think even back then, I think you were more of a plot reader. Especially.
I misdefined myself, yeah.
Wheel of Time kind of changed that for me. Because I look at it as like, the plot itself is especially in the beginning, not as entertaining. It's slow in many aspects. The thing that I connected with was the characters of Wheel of Time. That was the draw. And so when you disconnected with it, I'm going, I'm wondering why he's not connecting with these characters. But the fact that you focus more on plot made, and then in the review, a lot of your complaints was, for the most part, complaints about the plot. And so it made sense to me. Yeah. So I think even back then, you were more likely a plot reader than a character reader.
I agree. I think early on in my journey, I was thinking, like, Stormlight was my introduction. And when I think Stormlight, I think, oh, look at Kaladin and Dalinar, some of my favorite characters.
Sure.
But so maybe that's where it was coming from in my head. But yeah,
you were in love with Darrow and all the side characters. You're so emotionally connected to these characters.
But is it also the plot of Darrow? Yeah. Like, Darrow's a plot machine.
Yeah.
You know, so for characters, what are people looking for? I do have responses on the Patreon for people that love characters the most. But what do you think? Why do you think people are character readers? Why is this important in a book?
I understand why it's the most popular answer.
It is the number one answer that everybody gave, yeah.
It makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking about in the very beginning of this video, that books are there for the purpose of empathy. Putting yourself into another perspective, another person's shoes, is the essence of empathy. And that kind of goes hand in hand with characters. Mm-hmm. If you can empathize with a character, you're already halfway there. And that's ultimately a goal of a novel. So I understand.
Yeah.
It's just, it's important for me as well, but I've read too many books where the characters are wholly irrelevant, and yet I still love the book.
That's why
do amazing characters connect you with a story and make you, like, fall in love? It's really important.
Lonesome Dove for you.
Lonesome Dove.
For us. And yeah. First Law,
I so many great examples of amazing characters can just make a novel, but to me, it doesn't break a novel. I can have a story with, like, amazing characters and everything else sucks, and I'm like, yeah, I'm still there, because the character is so important. I see that.
You don't even have to name the character, and I could love the book. I have some examples of Children of Time,
yep.
Fire Upon the Deep,
yep.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, This Is How You Lose a Time War, where literally the characters are red and blue. Those are all books I really enjoy or love, like on a scale of like to love. And the characters are just there. They're vehicles for whether it be the theme.
Annihilation.
I do love the character in Annihilation, though. She is deep and flawed and interesting.
Probably
she's
a
named
poor
just
example.
Biologist, but
yeah.
I do love that character. But yes, yeah, that's your point of, like, she's not even named, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, how many books have you read where, again, characters are just flat?
To me, Neuromancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the characters are fine, I guess. Fine at best. And I still really enjoyed the novel. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. It can make a novel, but it, to me, doesn't break a novel.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot in nonfiction, where maybe there's not even a character in nonfiction books.
Mm-hmm.
Nonfiction can, in general, have... Why do people read nonfiction? Depending on the type, often it's for some educational value or for something that you want to learn something, you want to explore a new topic. We're in the fiction, fantasy, sci-fi, so I feel like a lot of fantasy sci-fi readers can be very character-focused, because this is... You're looking at sagas like The Wheel of Time, Lord of the Rings, that you're following a fellowship mm-hmm. for so long that you're now going to think back to, this is such a real person, of Randall Thor or Frodo. All these people are real-life people to you. When you cosplay and you go places, who are you dressing up as?
Yeah.
Well, my favorite character of all time. Yeah. So, like, my Hadrian Marlowe, Misaki, our favorite characters. I will defend them till I die.
Often your emotional connection to a novel will be through the characters. And so if you are reading for, like, if you're an emotion first, if you're reading for entertainment, often that will come through the characters.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why that scene makes you cry is because how it affects the character and how that character feels about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for most people, most of the time, that makes sense. It's just, I like sci-fi too much to say characters is number one. That's really it. I like sci-fi, so characters can't be number one on my list.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And some of those examples were Children of Time, Fire Upon the Deep, that stuff, yeah. Mr. Blask said, this is from the Patreon, characters are the most important to me. You can follow a character through a quote-unquote boring plot. You can get your themes across with character development. You can have a completely mundane world and a great character will make you want to stay in that world. Emotional impact is usually tied to characters and prose is the cherry on top for me, so I think characters is the most important part to a story. And Dove says, for what it's worth, my answer to what I care the most about is characters. And, okay, Dove gave us the answer. 57% of people voted for characters at the time she commented this. So she said, I could read an emotional, impactful scene, a thought-provoking scene, a cool plot point, an interesting world setting, a lush prose, but none of it gets me invested the way a character does. The character could be a person or an ant or a leaf girl or even an anthropomorphic world itself, but who the story is happening to and who's at the middle will always be my greatest focus. It's already been pointed out, but I do find it interesting that characters was discussed. That's because the discussion people weren't talking about characters yet. But
gotcha.
To their point, it seems to be that that's accurate case of you wanting to, you feel the most and you read a story because who is telling the story?
Yeah.
What's your viewpoint? That seems to be important.
Yeah. For the most part, for most people, characters being first makes the most sense. I get it.
And that's why I would consider myself or thought I was a character reader at first as well, was because as I was following in these viewpoint characters of, oh, I care so much about this person, I've just found so many examples, like you were saying now, of books that characters are obsolete and I love them. So how can I have characters as my favorite when I'm going, a lot of my favorite books is I couldn't tell you their names.
Yeah.
To that point, I couldn't tell you some of their names. And that's not just from us being horrible at memorizing names. It's just...
It's part of it.
That is part of it.
But it's not the whole part.
Exactly. Okay. So, anything else with characters of why...
No, I mean, it's the majority answer and makes the most sense for the most people. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a writer, focusing on characters makes a lot of sense. And trying to, you know, reach to the most people, that is how you're going to connect with a reader.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, I'm thinking of books that you can connect with page one often is because of the character. So if it just on pure strategy alone, if you have someone who is maybe more patient and willing to read a good chunk of a book before dropping it, then maybe characters are not nearly as important. But if you're more worried about people, like, I want to grab the reader from page one. They won't let go.
Project Hail Mary.
You know, Joe Abercrombie's books in its entirety. I'm thinking of, again, I'm not spoiling anything. It's like page one of a character. All right. Glockta walking down the stairs. Page one, I'm invested in this character. And I'm like, I got to read more. I got to know more about this character. You grabbed me on page one. Project Hail Mary, The Martian, Andy Weir gets you invested with this character, page one. To some degree, maybe you can do that with plot, but everything else, I think it's a lot harder to do that. It's a lot easier to grab people with a character.
And some of my favorite messages come from character messages. Themes that are, what are the character's flaws? What do they want? What do they need to learn?
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what a lot of character-focused stories are.
Yep.
And how many of those, when I think back to Way of Kings, of not spoiling stories, so don't worry, but I think to the character journey of Kaladin and others and going, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So it that is both why I care about Kaladin, but also the thematic message hits. And that's also wonderful. I have something I wanted to pull up that's a little off the beaten path, but it is, I saw this today as, yeah.
Real quick, pause. Mm-hmm. It's making me anxious. Can you please move that water glass away from all the electrical outlets?
Yeah, let's keep that in the podcast just to keep water right next
all
to
right. That. Yeah, that just, yep. I saw that and I was like, man, that's a lot of expensive electronic equipment there.
Yeah, put that there. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
So earlier today, I saw this song for the first time and I wanted to play it because I love this song.
Okay.
It is, I'm not kidding, it's probably my favorite song right now.
That's nice.
Yeah, just
that's lovely of you to share with us.
Yes, and the reason I'm sharing it in the character section is to show, I found that I didn't just discover this. I knew this existed, but storytelling and music, I will listen to music in the background. I'm not the most musical person out there, but this song tells such a beautiful story, and it has a theme, a plot, has all these elements to it. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to show a small example of a 2-minute song where the characters, the title of it is called The Preacher and the Stripper.
Okay.
And it's like they're not named, and you don't know, it's a song. You don't know deeply who these characters are. It's just this preacher and a stripper. And it's more so about
the dynamic.
Yes. So let's play this, and I want your reaction. I think it's lovely. All right.
Okay.
Uh-oh, it's not playing. Hold on. Fixing now. There we go. Here. Oh, here's the song.
Also, too, I didn't realize that I was doing it whenever I wrote this, but I wrote the words to it, but the listeners get to decide what the actual story was to this song.
This is beautiful.
A preacher and a stripper are standing on a bridge. One's on the dress for women. One's in the Sunday best. One's quoting the scripture. One's blaming God for this. One's saying, help me understand. And one's standing on the edge. Guess which one's which? A preacher and a stripper are standing on a bridge. One's wasted off of liquor. One's never had a sick. One's late for family dinner. One says they lost their kids. One jumps into the river. One tries to catch them and they slip. Guess which one's which? A preacher and a stripper fall off of a bridge. One ain't a real good swimmer. And that current takes them with. One was a first place winner, high school breaststroke in 96. Instead of heading towards that bank, they chase a help me in the mix. Guess which one's which? A preacher and a stripper fell off of a bridge. Cops put two and two together. Seeing how neither of them live. In the paper there's a picture that only one of them was in. The one that died a hero trying to save the other, can you guess which one's which? A preacher and a stripper walk up to the gates. One knows they were a sinner. One thinks they were a saint. One gets into heaven. One's name ain't on the list. Guess which one's which? Guess which one's which?
Come on.
It's a good song.
I love that song. And I saw that today. I was sending it to people because storytelling in that song is... What's the theme of it? What's the story? What's the plot? Like all of these things, I found it helped me. This little song just helped me decide what do I care about in a story. Mm. And that was 2-minute song. Is it a deep character thing? No, but what a beautiful.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Beautiful message. What a stunning story. What an interesting concept. And I will now think of that song forever. And it's not the deep complexity of the preacher and stripper. It's just the preacher and a stripper. It's the message of, oh my God, stunning. But anyways, that was a small example of why characters is lower for me.
The theme of basically status, preconceived notions, and your own identity being is your own self-identity of value and all this stuff. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And it's like a mini tragedy. Oh, stunning. But that is just an example of character work and why I found more so of what do I think? What do I appreciate in things? And it was a small example. But yes, anything else you wanted to mention in characters?
Yeah, to me, I have it smack dab there in the middle of three. It's really important. It's a central theme to a good book. But yep, it's just sometimes I don't need it. That's the only reason it's lower.
Got it. You ready for number four?
Number four. Let's go on.
Plot.
Important thing. What'd the people have to say? Where'd the people place this one?
The people place this one. The people and the stripper. They placed this third overall.
Third. Okay.
Yes. Did you concur with the people? Or did you already have a third? No, a third was characters.
Characters.
Where did you give this?
Last.
Six for you.
Six.
Wow. That be something. Yeah, it's number one for me, so that's where it's opposites.
Yeah.
Plot's my number one.
Yeah, I can have a book with no plot. It is not the central thing for me. I've had a lot of meandering plots that I've just love. And I don't think Lonesome Dove has a particularly meandering plot. It's not the plot itself is not bad, but it's certainly not the highlight of the story. That it's, an intricate, well thought, like just plot. It's more of the characters are just living their life. There is, the basic structure of, you're going to take the cattle from here to here. You get to experience that with them. That's it. There's no real, I don't know. It's not an intricately woven plot, and I still love its story. And that happens at Wheel of Time for me. Over the grand scale, it does have a very intriguing plot. It's good, but it's not standout. Like, it's not at the forefront of my mind. There are moments that stand out, but to me, it's the characters and those moments and the themes that it's trying to say is what's grabbing me. The plot is not it. So many times, like Red Rising, I think Red Rising does best its plot. Plotting from Red Rising is often what Pierce Brown is really good at. However, I think more about the characters. And that's where I'm focused on. Maybe a reason why I like Joe Abercrombie more than you is I think I value characters more so than plot. Plot to me is not as important.
The ending of the trilogy for me was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so overall, it's just where I place it. So why do you place it number one? Why have you changed?
He was number one. Now, here's why he's number one. First, some example books of what I mean plot. Guy Gabriel Kay's The Lines of Aurasan sticks out to me. I said Red Rising enough times. Something like that. Something like even the books that I think are super compelling and thought-provoking, like Children of Time, as an example as well, is another one of those books that I think is perfectly plotted that sometimes the themes coincide with plot to me is what is the story being told of the reason I'm reading a long book, a narrative is it's a story. What is the sequence of events that are happening? What's the hook? What's the promise, progress, payoff? And typically what gravitates me toward an amazing plot. So if I'm giving a book 5 stars, it's a book that it didn't necessarily have to like page turner me. That's more an emotional impact, right? But did this book, did all the plot points interweave to what the story is? Like, what is the story saying? Was there no fat? Was the book so enjoyable that I never felt like I wasted my time? Because if I'm the complaint about a book sometimes, it'll be like, hey, it wasn't worth it. And when I say it's not worth it in the end, here's why plot's important. Here's a couple of things. You read a tome that's 450,000, 80,000 pages. It's like Winded Truth or something like that. In a book that long, why that can be more frustrating to me is I felt like I wasted time and could have gotten this in a much shorter time frame. Like the pacing of a book, all the issues that I could typically have is just why did it spend this long to do what you could have done in a 2-minute song? Like if you're writing a narrative, you're writing a book, a long series, why some of my favorite series, like Sun Eater, for example, each book shows me why this story is still worth telling of there's more plot to be had. I'm not the more meandering plot of like just it can happen. I can enjoy them, but to really get me going is where's this progressing? What's the point? And the plot is the point. The plot is the progress of, like, why are you telling me this story in the first place? And so everything kind of comes back to there of why I didn't like Wheel of Time. Like, the first three books, not spoiling anything, but it was like, you can understand my point of why I didn't like it. I'm just like,
could it be cut? It sacrifices a tight plot for characters you're supposed to kind of sit with. In many ways, like a sitcom has its, you know, the plot of a sitcom ultimately is kind of repetitive in the sense of after the end of every episode, the characters kind of reset. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
But what you give away in some type of plot progression, you gain in, you know, character moments, and you get to feel like you understand these characters in their smaller moments.
Yeah.
That's the trade-off for it, and why people really can deeply connect with sitcom characters, why people rewatch The Office over and over and over and over again. That's the reason why I love The Wheel of Time. It's like, I get to sit with some of these characters through little weird moments that are not really important for a plot, but make me like the characters more, and I get to see them in these little moments that a tighter plot would have just cut that out. And it's a trade-off.
And that's for me where it's different for books than films or other storytelling for me, where a film, plot's not my number one thing on a film. If it's like an hour and a half film, movie like After Sun, where it's plot is slow, dull, or whatever you want to use for the plot, maybe it's not super good. I would say the plot's really great for other reasons, but the plots of the movies, because I'm spending way less time, it's kind of a time value of the more a book is, the more plot it is justifying that, but also... with the stories that I find I appreciate a ton, were thematic elements plus that, like talking about Lions of El Rasan or Sword of Kaig, another one of my favorite books. Any of my favorites, I think, all of my favorites pretty much have to have a compelling, whatever I see as a great plot. You know,
just no fat. A plot that you go, man, every page was necessary for that plot, and you feel like you didn't waste any time.
And Sword of Kaigan has a little fat on it, but in the same way of the plot to me is also I love a good idea for a book. I'm a big concept. Obviously, the execution matters much more, but give me an interesting idea can hook me. Of Children of Time's first chapter was, that's a crazy good idea. I'm already hooked, and now I am invested in your story. So a concept or idea can hook me even more than a character can, I found, of... The intro to a character being like Glockta or interesting and quirky, I can like that, but I will like a more interesting plot hook than a character hook when I'm reading. So that's what I found. So over time, that's changed since the beginning of this podcast of figuring out what I liked more.
Interesting.
But yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm just different in that sense. I will value a character's hook over a plot hook often.
Mm-hmm. And that could help us explain in future reviews. We're like, why'd you give this lower? We already kind of knew this, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we represented both sides of this. We don't need the plebeians to come in.
We could still include them.
I didn't have any. They didn't talk about plot.
Oh, then never mind. They don't get a spot. They didn't get to talk about it.
Now, here's our last two. Our second to last here is world building. And if you want to build a beautiful world, by the way, remember to go to worldanvil.com. Link in the description. Look at that second.
Look at that. Like an expert.
World building. What do you give this out of your 1 through 6?
Number 2.
Very high.
Very high for me. Like where you're saying a good plot, like a good plot hook will get you into a novel and carry you through a lot of bullshit.
So will this?
World. A good world hook will carry me through a lot. If I'm interested in this world, I'll deal with a lot of bullshit. Just because I like the world. So, to me, Sun Eater with book one, what carried me through the book, where characters, I was on the fence going like, I don't know, I'm even supposed to like Hadrian. I think I'm supposed to dislike him. Plot, to me, not the best. Prose was on the better side. Like, it was good prose. It was well written. But the thing that hooked me early on, really early on, was just how the cryo sleep functioned and Rocchio going into detail of like how space travel works over these great distances, which you've seen before in other things, but just the way it's thought out made I was locked into the world, and I was immediately interested in just how the Nobile society, like the how Hadrian and his ilk are these genetic super beings, and how that exactly affects the rest of the universe, how that one affects them with space travel, just on a, you know, technical level. And then the scene with, I don't think I spoiled anything so far, but like that's the world.
Careful. I was ready to say something.
I was about to spoil something and I held myself off.
Good.
But a great world hook will carry me through.
Yeah.
It's what I love. It's what I need.
That's very fair. Yeah.
Where did you place it?
I gave it 5 out of 6.
Nice and low. Real, real low for you.
The reason it's low, I love a good world, but to me, world building is icing. Now, I love, it's fantasy and sci-fi, so of course we are in the world where there's a bunch of great world building, but that is the, that's the icing, that's the benefit. That's the, I read fantasy and sci-fi because I get what I can get from other stories, but ooh, also a new and interesting world. That is, ooh, bonus points. Cool. Mm-hmm. So that, I just view it as more so having that is awesome. I will always accept more great world building. Yeah.
This also is maybe a good explanation of how we each see the Lord of the Rings movies versus the books.
Mm-hmm.
How I place the books significantly higher than the movies to me.
Can you not say significantly? Just say higher. Fine. The movies are significantly higher than the great books as well.
And the chief reason among those is the world. The world in the books, all a lot better. It's the focus of the novels.
Okay.
Obviously.
The world building of the books better than the movies. Shocker.
Shocker. It's the reason I love it.
The prose is better, dumbass. Of course it is.
But the movies do a better focus on the plot and making, you know, cutting down, especially the choice between cutting back and forth between POVs instead of long stretches in one. So Peter Jackson made a lot of changes, cuts, and rearrangements for the sake of a plot to make the plot better. I fully acknowledge it. To me, though, it does it at the sacrifice of some of the world.
Well, it's got to be shorter than the books, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, it's what I love the most about Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. What that alone absorbed me into a world where I was not let go. It is still impactful to me to this day. It got me to read the Silmarillion, got me to just study more about it. I fell in love. That's why world building has to be at least second for me. It so many different sci-fi novels of just the world and concept will carry me through anything. I've mentioned Neuromancer several times before now. It's also a good example. That world took me in, and I was fascinated to explore that world, even with a dull character.
What worlds can do for me, you know how characters can give you a different viewpoint, like the character, if it's a satellite looking down at Earth, what would that character's point of view look like? What worlds allow for me is things that regular fiction can't do or nonfiction can't do, where fantasy and sci-fi breaks the rules of our reality, so it gives you new rules, and now what story can you tell within those new rules?
Mm-hmm.
So the cool thing about world building for me is, all right, if this is the world, if the world was like this, if some fantasy sci-fi, if this gadget existed, if this was the future, if that is the case, then what is the story? So the cool thing for me is, I love getting my world building, like Sun Eater, one of my favorite worlds out there, but having this world that allows you to then be a vehicle for the plot, the themes, the emotional impact, that's what gets me. So I'm going Middle Earth, for example. Of amazing world in Middle Earth, or talk about Roshar, which amazing world up to a certain point, and then anything that has amazing world building. What I like about, here's an easier example, Stormlight, to be very spoiler soft, has these storms that cycle through the world, and that affects the architecture, and that affects the culture, affects all these things. And then the interesting thing for me is then how, if the world is like that, then what kind of story can you tell? What would a society that looks like this or functions like this, what would a interesting perspective be in Middle Earth then? Of what can you tell me about if elves or these creatures can live thousands and unlimited lifetimes, essentially? What can you tell me about that? That's immortality? Ooh, what does that mean? All that kind of stuff. But to your point about world building, yeah, I think I think you got on something. There's two things. This and the next category is when people say the books are better than the movies. It's, well, the world. Look at how much deep world you get and all the internal dialogue and prose. That's just not, the movies can never replicate. And that's when you get the book reader who, I'm like this with a lot of books too, but it's like, all the books are better than the movies because the movies can't replicate some of that magic.
Yeah. And it's the things that I value most, but there are some books that I think are better leaning toward their movie adaptations, like Project Hail Mary. I am actually thoroughly excited for it because I think that book can be made into a really good movie without sacrificing some of the qualities that made the book good. That's my hope. So I'm very excited for that movie.
A hopeful book giving you hopeful.
I know. I'm never much of a, hopeful. I am generally an adaptation pessimist. I've been burned too many times before. I'm just generally not a fan at this point. That one is the exception. I'm so excited for it.
It seems more adaptable.
Yeah.
And I think adaptations in general nowadays do better when it's a recent story and the author's maybe alive as well, to where it can be more offbeat. If the author's passed, if it's an older story, you're now trying to convey a story that was told by this author at this time and then infusing your own kind of take on what the zeitgeist has said about the story and what you feel about the story. Whereas if you get somebody that's more involved, and that's a whole tangent of just,
we've done that before,
lots. Yeah. But here's what other people said on world building. In the Patreon, Cade said, "World building isn't always the most important for a story, but for me, it is integral to believability, and that is what I value most when it comes to these fantastical worlds we read. World building encompasses so much of a story: the history, the cultures, the science, etc. World building is also what I care about the most because it's what comes easiest to me when writing, so I latch onto it when reading. Prose, plot, emotional impact, and all the rest can be mediocre, but if you give me a believable world, I'll be hooked." And you agree with Cade?
I agree with Cade. I'm with him. I'm with him 100%.
Sweet. Anything else on world before plot or sorry before prose?
No, that's about it.
Our last category of prose.
Mm-hmm.
What did you give this?
I gave it number four.
Number four.
Number four.
You built up your pretentiousness. I like
did.
That.
I
used to remember it was lower for you, but it inched up.
It was lower, but I've come to
good.
The, yeah. If we're talking about things that could break a novel, like what's your least I important thing? That. And it's more and more becoming like, if the prose isn't up to a certain quality, I can drop it. And I value prose more so than emotion and plot even. You can have a pretty lackluster plot, but if it's at least written well, I'll probably enjoy it more versus a well-done plot that is written poorly.
I think Keith and Tarante, he's on your side too. There's a lot of people that... I think this was last, though, on the... Let me double-check. Yes, this was last on the Patreon. I do agree. It's number six for me, but not because good prose isn't amazing. It's one of those things of, again, it's icing.
Mm-hmm.
Of I can read a book or tolerate a book that's passable prose. If it's passable prose but does all the other things well, awesome, I'm going to love the book. So that's where it's coming from for me. But you're looking at prose going, can the prose to you just evoke emotion or intrigue, or just even the lines itself, the dialogue? How many dialogue scenes have you read where you're just going, I'm looking forward to just seeing what the exchange is, because it sounds pretty.
To me, prose is something that can make even the mundane, like, enthralling.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Lonesome Dove, for example, mm-hmm. is a book that take all of the individual elements of the characters, the plots, the themes, everything that it does in the hands of a different writer written a different way would not even be on my radar of books to read. It wouldn't even be a consideration. It really isn't anything about that. It ultimately comes down to the prose. I've talked about this before way too many times, but there's a scene that I'm just going to say it. I don't think it's really a spoiler, but there's a scene in Lonesome Dove fairly early on where it's several pages. It's like at least 2-3 pages worth of the narrator telling us about a sign, the story of how the sign was made for this cattle company. That's it. That's not that interesting in concept. In execution of any other type, it doesn't work. But because Larry McMurtry is a writing god, he wrote that in a way that was compelling. It gave you more information about the characters than you could ever get from dedicated individual chapters to them. It was brilliant. The prose is amazing and tied everything together in a way that I will always remember. So to me, it has become more important to me over time.
One counterpoint.
Shoot.
The Name of the Wind.
That's a fair counterpoint. That's a fair counterpoint.
No, because I am so, like when you said that Lonesome Dove scene or any beautiful prose, it elevates the scenes. So when we've been mentioning, they're just in our heads right now. We've been mentioning the same books, but Guy Gavroquet's Lines of Al-Rasan, of love the themes of the story. The prose just makes it like, oh, it's all of that and it's beautiful. Amazing. Well, whereas, yeah.
Going from my list, mm-hmm. Name of the Wind is a good example of, yeah. To me, prose is more important than both emotion and the plot. When I'm reading Name of the Wind, I don't think the plot is as intriguing, but because it was written well, it was not hard for me to get through. Mm-hmm. Chapter to chapter, it wasn't hard for me to pick up the next page. It was well written. I was carrying through. I cared more about the prose. Mm-hmm. But the things that broke me for the story was the characters and the themes. And those are rated higher for me than prose. And those sucked so much for me that I hate the book.
Yeah, the example, maybe this is my world building and prose thing, why I call them more icing, is if you just gave me, for example, I don't know, I haven't read the Silmarillion, but if you just gave me like a Middle Earth textbook, a textbook on this land, or if you just gave me prose to read and like sound beautiful, those things would be great, but not, if it's just that, I wouldn't go, this is my favorite thing. Mm. Of if something sounds pretty, I mean, poetry's pretty. Poetry can be great. Will I ever do I look at poetry and think, oh, that, I would think it's a profound poem for all the other reasons, not just it sounds pretty, I guess. But it's fair enough to say, I guess with Name of the Wind, even though the prose is really good in Name of the Wind, isn't enough to carry the book in every other regard for me. So I guess if a book is, if you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig, is basically the point of, you can make a pig look as pretty as you want, but it's still going to be the Name of the Wind. Sorry, Salty Q. What's the other list of people that get annoyed when they mention the Name of the Wind? All other people.
Yeah.
You know, we've done it enough times, but.
Well, my point. It's the reason why I don't have it rated any higher. You're right. I don't think prose can carry a novel, but I think it's more important than the emotion and the plot.
More
but I don't
than emotion. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And plot. Oh.
Yeah. Killing to me. But characters are more important than a prose. Same thing with themes and world building. So yeah, it's not the most important, but it is more important than some things. That's a ranking.
That's your ranking. And this is what they said in the Patreon. Old Martin said, I just finished a 900-page book, which was basically all repetition, but it was hypnotizing, truly something else. This is a quote. He almost always gets something out of modern so-called incomprehensible poetry. Not that he understands it either in the usual way, but he does kind of understand it in a different way. Yes, it's like it's something you have to understand with something other than intelligence or your mind. It's like those poems are incomprehensible the same way life is, he said. Not a full stop, all 900 pages. Oh, so it's like just keeps going and flowing for 900 pages.
Jesus.
Wow.
That's, I don't know if I'd call that good, but you know what? I won't judge until I read it, I guess. I will withhold judgment, but that sounds exhausting.
And then Mitch replied to that saying, well, the issue with the prose is that it's purely mechanical. Prose alone does not dictate how good or bad a story is. If the prose is phenomenal, but the characters and plot are half-baked, it's a bad book. And then old Martin says, well, for me, the story or characters can't be the most important part of reading. I've read books with great stories that were written well, and I've read books barely with a story but different focus, such as a character or a theme or whatever, and I'll read both if it's well written. Some authors do truly have a way with words. It is also the unique quality of books. Whereas a story can be told in multiple mediums, I believe it is the most important aspect. Interesting. Hmm. And then Mitch says, another reason why I disagree with Martin is that the prose can be really good, but if the message behind it isn't there, is it even worth saying? Or at the very least, does the message even make sense or the story for the story that's being told? You can have a massive ocean, but if it's an inch deep, little to nothing is going to live in it. Ah, like the pig analogy, right?
Yeah.
But yes, that is both sides make sense there, where Martin makes a point of, hey, what makes books special is actually the written word. And then
I think that is a very convincing argument of, like, yeah, there's multiple mediums to telling a story. For books, it's prose, and so that's what makes it most important for books. I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand that. Basically, it's the justification of, should this story be told in this medium,
mm-hmm.
or could it have been told a different way? If the prose is not important, then the argument goes like, well, is it in the right medium even?
This would be the equivalent to a cinephile or someone who likes movies of the cinematography and the filmmaking being your favorite part of a movie. Like the movie making process, the art mm-hmm. behind it. Because if anything is artful about a book, it's the prose. Well, lots of things, but the mechanical, if that's a way to put it, maybe that's the right word.
Sure.
But whatever the talent is or the skill behind writing something beautiful or shooting a good shot, and to translate that to films for me, love great cinematography. But if it's just beautiful shots for a long time,
mm-hmm.
I need, like, the reason 2001 A Space Odyssey isn't my favorite thing. I like it. It's not, I don't love it, but I like it. It's because, yeah, I get it's beautiful and technical, but that's not the thing that gets me off. Yeah.
Haha.
But yeah. But
I'm surprised it took you a second.
Yeah. I realized it when you laughed and then, yeah, got it. But that for you, like, would you translate prose to watching a movie and appreciating the shots and go, you think similarly as well of,
yeah,
when you're watching a movie, you appreciate it and would maybe put it forth as well of, hey, you really like good cinematography.
Yeah, I really like it. I don't think it's the most important aspect, but it's more important than some aspects to me now. I remember if you asked me 1 to 2 years ago, I would have rated prose less. But today, I rate it a bit higher.
And hey, bad prose and bad filmmaking, for example, if it looks bad or sounds bad, can ruin a book.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it has to be bad. You know, okay. I've read a lot of passable prose that's like, hey, it's fine, it's passable, and you can still enjoy a book. But yeah, anything else, Rich, that you have thoughts on these categories, and did this help us explore of why we rate books the way we
do? I guess so. It's also this is a follow up to us discussing us trying to be clearer in our words and what we value importance in our category of thought-provokingness, and do we mean themes, and what does thought-provokingness mean to you, what does it mean to us, and how that kind of miscommunication happens, and what we value in that category. And so this is kind of an offshoot of that conversation, that we wanted to be clear on what we value, what we mean by these words. So,
and we didn't get exactly into the meaning, but if you want to see all of that, it's in the rate. We have a rating doc below with descriptions of what we mean by each category.
And instead of a focus on just a pure number as a, like, an objective scale, it's more of trying to be as clear as possible by what we mean and what we think, not necessarily like what official score of, like, this is the objective rating. It's more, this is supposed to be useful for someone to understand our thoughts. And so we're trying to be objective in our own subjective opinion, judging things by the same standard and using the same words.
And we talked this out because we got a lot of responses from the Dispossessed review that we did.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the themes of thought-provokingness for like hours or an hour, and we gave it a low score. And the question is, well, if it provoked lots of thoughts, why was it a low score?
Yeah.
And explain like where we're coming from, what that means. Of, I use the example of emotional impact. Yes, it impacted emotions, but it was negative emotions. Like, it provoked thought, but it was disagreement thought. And I think one of the conclusions we came down to was this might be uninteresting. People probably haven't even saw our
this is why we
thing.
Kept it to the end.
This is why it's in the end.
It's not the end.
This is just Rich and I are talking. You can just sit there. Do whatever you want.
You can click off if you want. Yeah, it's fine. The main part of the video is over.
You can go now.
We're just explaining ourselves.
Do whatever you want. Okay, but
yeah.
The whole thing, I think the misunderstanding there about provoking thought is the dispossessed for us didn't provoke a challenging thought. For us, it was like, Okay, it was kind of dismissive, like, oh, I have an answer to it, or I disagree.
I am waiting to be challenged, and my thoughts were not sufficiently challenged.
The thing it did is it provoked discussion. Like, Jared loved the book, and everybody else loved the book, so it was discussion provoking, but personally, why it wasn't a challenging thought, because we read it and went, it's saying this, I disagree with this, that doesn't work. It was more. We dismissed it more than we were going, ooh, that challenges a worldview. How do I explain myself? Because if it was compelling and made us provoke thought of like, how is this thing challenging? And so it wasn't that like that. That's what we mean by it, right?
It's a combination of for us. Thought provoking is not just process. And
they're not here.
They're not here. It's fine. But like, it's instead of just process, it's also the idea itself and whether you, if not agree, like, oh, it convinced you, provided some compelling challenge where it made you think in a different way or understand a new point of view. The problem with the dispossessed is I felt like I still don't understand people valuing anarchism. And ultimately, it failed the job of, to me, of expanding my point of view and giving me another perspective to
provoking that challenge.
It did not provoke the challenge. And so I'm going like, I'm still not sufficiently challenged. I need more.
But is it a top tier book club pick?
Oh,
and something where it provokes discussion.
100%.
On the discussion scale, 5 stars of like, hey, if you want a book where there's going to be disagreements and interesting topics to discuss, yes.
Yep.
That's what it kind of comes down to.
I just understand that the term is confusing.
I do too.
Themes was too narrow for us to talk about, so we liked thought-provoking, but it doesn't cover everything, and maybe it's too broad, and it's, you know, it's more of a description rather than a description of quality. We get it. There are problems. We're trying to work on it.
What do you think of it? Because the writing site before that comes up of, man, we should have timed this video with the writing site. That would have been good.
Yeah, that would have been
good. We are bad marketers.
We are bad marketers.
Wow, that's lame.
We used to be better marketers. We used to have that hustle in us, and now it's... I feel the hustle. The hustle has simmered.
We have the trip coming up soon.
We got to get back in the hustle.
Our hustle comes back when we go on vacations. Because we're on vacation, the third day of a vacation hits, and we go, all right, I've done the fun. I've expended my time. Now let's do something.
I am so excited for our vacation where I don't have to think about food. I don't have to think about work. I don't have to think about what I'm going to do in the next day. I can literally dedicate my entire time to just fitness and books. I'm so excited.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's being able to just hyper focus your energy on the things you want to. Instead of, you know, reality where you're constantly divided, your divided attention and energy and all these different things that make life possible.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah. What he said. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, I know they cut off like, you know, 10 minutes ago, but.
Anything else you want to talk about is superfluous and nothing?
I should get back into guitar.
Your guitar's right there.
It's right there. I know. I need to put it off the wall. What do you think I should try and if I'm one, pick up another hobby? Yeah. It's another thing for me of dividing my attention.
You just said,
what do you think?
You're going, there's too many things going on. And let me
you understand
add on to
that my trying to put in fitness, trying to do woodwork, keep in my woodworking hobby, and just coding. It's a lot. There's too many things that take too much time.
Oh.
But what do you think?
Saxophone, that reminds me of your description.
Practicing saxophone again or guitar?
Saxophone.
Saxophone?
Yeah, definitely.
It's harder in an apartment. Guitar, you can be a little quieter and still practice.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with piano. I should probably get back. I should try piano again.
My uncle's a saxophone player, and I just love the sax.
It's so good.
It's the best. I it's so beautiful.
You know what I love about
it? Guitars are too, but yeah.
I think saxophones have it's an exponential curve ratio of effort.
Okay.
I think it's one of the easiest instruments to learn, but very difficult to master of, like, actually getting into the professional status is very difficult comparative to, I think, like, trumpet has a much harder learning curve, but it, because it's really hard in the beginning, it, there's a easier trajectory upward. And of course, mastery at any level is incredible levels of difficulty. I just think there is a somewhat of a wall of, in fairly quick succession, you can get adequate at saxophone. It's a very easy to play instrument. It just gets really difficult when you're trying to be a master
for saxophone. So if you are, how many presses or buttons, what is it called, how many are there,
keys,
how many of those are there? Because my understanding is it's one hand here, one here. So is it 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 Dang.
Technically 13, 14, 15, 16.
What, so
16 buttons.
My understanding was that it was like 8 or 10 or something. Like each finger had a button or
a key. Each finger has a key.
And then there's...
But then the pinky, the right pinky, has two keys that you can either press. So those are, there's two there. Then your thumb, so this thumb has a button, this other thumb down here, your right, doesn't have a button. But then your palm has at least three keys that you can press in different succession.
Oh.
And then the palm down here has three you can press. And then also there's your pointer finger has one or two keys to press.
Very nice.
So that is, oh, and then this pinky has actually more, one, two, three, yeah, four. Four on this pinky as well. I miscounted. That's more than 16 then. There's more.
I have a challenge for you.
Hmm.
Either sax or the guitar, you play the chords that the preacher and the stripper was doing.
Okay.
That, whatever that the chords were.
It's hard. It was very can't play chords on a saxophone.
So take what I said about sax, learn guitar instead.
Okay.
Do guitar and then play that song so that we can sing it along.
Jam out? Okay. Yeah. That sounds fun. Oh, you guys are still here.
All right, we're gonna go.
I guess we're gonna shut off the camera.
Oh,
now.
Oh no, did I screw up the recording by not that recording, the screen
recording?
No,
your recording's still.
Damn it.
What?
What
you
did
fuck
I
it up?
Do? Oh. Oh. Hey, sorry, editor Nick. Damn it, what did I do?
You not find it?
The screen recording, no. We should probably really... Oh, it's there!
There you go.
All right, we'll let you guys go. We'll see you next episode. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.